The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
You know, I'm thinking about a couple of things today. Mainly what I focused on as I was coming to work is the current political debate over the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution. You know, all that debate that Donald Trump principally is responsible for, the issue of whether the 14th Amendment really grants birthright citizenship to all children, virtually all children, I mean, with certain specific exceptions, grants them citizenship. But you know what I thought about? Rather than addressing that issue, what occurred to me was we are focusing our furor on the wrong amendment. The 14th Amendment has been around since the 19th century. I think that the debate we really need to have is on the Second Amendment, which is even older. It goes back to the 18th century. The Second Amendment. Here's what I want to know. Does the Second Amendment really give even dirtbag nut jobs like the Virginia television shooter Vester Lee Flanagan II, does it really give him the mentally impaired? Does it give him the right to keep and bear arms? Isn't that the constitutional debate that we urgently need in this country? Isn't that the debate we don't have the courage to confront? The right to keep and bear arms, really? Adam Lanza, James Holmes, Jared Loughner, Vester Lee Flanagan, that Virginia Tech mass murdering dog from a couple of years ago that I covered down there. The right to keep and bear arms. People on no-fly lists. People who have orders of protection against them. People like Vester Lee Flanagan II, who festered this hatred of all things. All things he blames what he did on the Charleston, South Carolina church massacre, really? This dirtbag nut job didn't need any particular encouragement. He was a loser in life. Couldn't keep a job. You know what he could do? He could walk into a Virginia gun store and arm himself with a Glock and all those extra rounds he needed to go and take the lives of these two wonderful young people. TV journalist Allison Parker, 24 years old. Adam Ward, 27 years old. And the political leadership that we have and the candidates that we have. Where are they in all this? Are they going to confront the reality that we are awash in guns, that we're gun crazy, and that even crazies can have guns? Isn't that Isn't that the issue that we need to talk about? Rather than ginning up all of this fake emotion over the 14th Amendment, why don't we have the courage to deal with the Second Amendment? Second Amendment, as it is currently construed, is stupid. It's stupid. It's thoughtless. Makes no distinction between someone who's a U.S. Army veteran with training on the one hand and an absolute erratic, narcissistic, jerk-off like Vester Lee Flanagan the second, Bryce Williams. All right, play Hillary from yesterday.
I want to reiterate how important it is to not let yet another terrible instance go by without trying to do something more to prevent this incredible killing that is stalking our country. And we've had so many terrible instances of it in the last 2 years. And there is so much evidence that if guns were not so readily available, if we had universal background checks, if we could just put some time out between the person who's upset because he got fired or the domestic abuse or whatever other motivation may be working on someone who does this, that maybe we could prevent this kind of carnage. So I hope that in addition to expressing sympathy for those directly affected, that this is maybe for the media, for the public, for elected officials, for every American, what it hopefully will finally take for us to act.
Whatever you think of the former First Lady, former Secretary of State, former Senator Hillary Clinton, she's right, isn't she? She's right. We need the courage to confront it. Instead, we run like scared little pussycats when the NRA comes stomping around. Second Amendment, Second Amendment. They're going to come to your house. They're going to take your guns because they're going to think you're a nut job. Where does it stop? So as a result, we have a nation where we have more guns than people. Over 300 million guns. Are you kidding me? What's it for? To protect against Barack Obama? What's it for? What's it for? The coming apocalypse? The zombies? Here's Donald Trump on the shooting.
This was a very sick man, and it's just too bad that we can't figure these things out beforehand. I mean, everybody sees the signals, but nobody thinks a thing like this could happen. It's all over the place. They see people, and they think they're disturbed, but what are you going to do, put them in jail for the rest of your life? You know, put him in jail for the rest of his life because he looks a little bit off, and he turned out to be very off. There was tremendous hatred. There was tremendous animosity. I guess there was lawsuits and litigation on all sorts of things with him, and he just blew up. He knew he was going to blow up, too, based on his memos and his notes. He was saying that he's going to blow up. Unfortunately, nobody saw that. And even if they did, what would you do? You'd say, oh, he said he's going to blow up. Probably hear that all the time, but in this case it happened. Too bad that we can't figure it out beforehand, but it's a pretty tough thing to do.
He's right. It's a very tough thing to do. But shouldn't it be at least as hard to get a gun permit as it is to get a driver's license? Isn't it bizarre that you just walk into a Virginia gun store and if you're not a convicted felon or if you're not wanted, you get a gun? And why not have a cooling off? Why not have a week wait? Is that going to kill anybody? Or a month? 866 Geraldo, let me go. Jingo. Hello?
Geraldo?
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to speak about the shooting in Virginia.
Go ahead.
It's been very upsetting to me. So many things on so many levels happening. The one thing I wanted to clear the air with, though, is yesterday you erroneously identified the shooter as a white man when, in fact, he was black. And I'm sure you'd agree that that type of a statement made publicly before all the facts were put forth wasn't the most prudent course of action given your position as a journalist. I understand the facts as they exist could lean in the direction of causing black on white racially motivated crime. Clearly, you played fast and loose with your journalistic integrity. I would submit to you and to your audience that you are being predisposed to the politically correct notion that allows for white males to be constantly...
Oh, so that's so bogus. Press. Give me a break. I'm predisposed. Okay. I'm predisposed to look at a picture and tell you what it looks like to me. And we corrected it as soon as we knew. I make a statement like that. I'm predisposed to think that it's a crazy white guy as opposed to a crazy black guy. Why would I be politically disposed to incorrectly identify the race of the perpetrator? What is politically correct is people who avoid identifying a perpetrator by race for fear that they would offend someone. I don't give a damn about offending anybody. If I think something is true, I'm going to say it. And if I find out that I'm wrong, I'm going to correct myself immediately, as I did. Predisposed. I mean, I don't want to insult anybody. I was just going to...
I think you should insult this guy, because his argument was that you were starting some sort of race war by saying that this guy was white. Well, by the way, the two people who were shot and killed were white. So initially, this gunman, when we saw the pictures, he looked like a white guy. It was a fluid situation. And when stories and facts come into us, you have to sort of go through all the information that's coming in. So much now comes in at once. You have to sort of say, okay, what's real and what's not legit? Because so much of it is not legit. And I thought we did actually a pretty good job yesterday. That might have been the only thing we got wrong. And rightfully so, if you look at those pictures, go look at them. I tell that caller, go look at the pictures of that gunman that were taken by the cameraman, Adam. And to me, he still looks like a white guy. It wasn't until we got an ID of this guy that we were able to look him up and say, okay, no, he's African-American.
And corrected it immediately.
Yeah. So
that, and another thing
so
about...
So you can insult him as much as you want because he just insulted us.
All right. Just go...
No,
go,
I just think it's nonsense. Okay. You're picking on us for no reason.
All right. Tell him to take a walk. Go listen to some station that you feel safer to your ears because you seem too sensitive. But I'm telling you, this bizarre rationale that this guy came up with, this whole Charleston, South Carolina church massacre of the 9 innocent black parishioners by the crazy white guy, to use that as justification for this is totally bogus. It is so obscene. It is so low down and insulting to every civil rights activist or worker or martyr throughout the centuries. This is just an excuse for a loser with a gun. And I go back to where I was yesterday. These murder suicides, they get it backwards. These psychopathic murder suicides, just do the suicide part first. You have a problem with the world, then just go wherever dirtbags go when they die. Leave the innocents alone to live out their own destinies.
Focused on this shooting of the two news folks from Virginia Live on TV, what do you think about the two tabloids? You've seen them, Noam, obviously. The Post, gunman shoots journalists during live broadcasts. So the big headline in the Post is TV murder, and it has, as he knew it would, it has the killer pointing the gun at the poor lady before he fires, before he shoots Allison Parker. But inside, and the news has a three-shot sequence, including the first shot, the moment that Vester Lee Flanagan fired the first shot at Allison Parker. When you open the tab, so how do you feel about that? How do you feel about the fact that it is just as the killer knew it would be? Our addiction to these pictures And the video, did you see the video?
I didn't see the video, but I saw the pictures on both of the tabloids, and I could have watched the video, but I just didn't have any, I didn't have any interest in watching it. But I think the newspapers did the right thing. I think you put those pictures on the paper, because guess what? That's what people want to see.
And it is our job. There is this, obviously, a sensational aspect to it. But what I thought about wasn't that debate. I mean, obviously, you all and we all have opinions on whether what the appropriate way to handle it is. Like, for instance, Noam did not watch the video because he chose not to. I did watch it because I don't know why. I don't usually. I never watch, for instance, the ISIS torture, murder,
right.
Heads being cut off or burning and drowning. And I just don't. I don't want to. But that's not what's on my mind. What's on my mind is, as you see the sequence of the pictures, you see the 24-year-old, the lovely, energetic, personable reporter, Allison Parker. She spots the gunman only after he shoots the first time. And I, you know, you get to a certain age, I'm not a morbid person, and I tend to have a positive attitude. You can't not have a positive attitude about life when you have a 10-year-old and then five children. You know, you do once in a while. You think morbidly, all right, what's going to be, how am I going to die? You wonder what that moment is going to be when you die. And I, whenever it occurs to me, and it doesn't occur to me often, but when it does, what I think about is I hope I'm having a happy thought. Like I always thought that the best time to die would be like having an orgasm or, you know, just thinking about your children or your grandchildren or you know, the boat, the wind, the moment, the existential optimistic. You just want to have a,
sure.
You don't want to go to eternity with a negative thought. And I think that that is what bothers me most about the video, and the particularly as the tabs have taken it frame by frame, you see the terror in this poor young lady's face, the shock, the horror when she realizes what has happened. And then we know from the video that she attempts to run away. She's already mortally wounded by that point. And then the killer turns his gun, the 9mm Glock, on the cameraman, Adam Ward. But that moment, it just is so sad to me that this child, really, this 24-year-old just starting her life, recently engaged to her colleague at the station, just starting her life, that her last seconds on Earth are filled with shock and horror and fear, not to mention the pain, if she felt anything, probably not in the context of the seconds that until she was, you know, totally, her life functions had stopped. But anger is not even the word for it. It's beyond anger. It is so tortured that this, I feel so badly for her, for her soul, for her family, that's the last that she saw of life on Earth was the murderer taking her young and promising life. Just such a melancholy thought. Sorry.
38 minutes after 10 o'clock, we welcome, without further ado, Kimberly McBroom, the anchor at station WDBJ.
Yes.
In Roanoke, Virginia, on the line right now. Kimberly, thank you very much for joining us. Our condolences from the bottom of our hearts. My God, you poor person. I mean, it's just awful. I we all feel for you. I mean, what's it like in your newsroom today? I saw your moment of silence earlier this morning, but
yes,
you must all be traumatized. Welcome.
We are. First, thank you so much for that. And I just want to say thank you to all the messages of condolences that have literally come in from all over the world. That is what is getting us through right now, and each other. You know, we at WDBJ7, we're a family. We are, and we are leaning on each other. We are crying together. We're holding hands. This morning was rough. It was, but we had a job to do. You know, this is what we do, and we were the only people that could tell Allison and Adam's story. It had to be us, you know. And that's what's getting us through. It's just their memory, and just, you know, we just want to share with everybody how wonderful people they were, how dedicated they were. They love their jobs. They love coming here every morning. You know, at 3 a.m. sometimes it's hard to be bubbly and energetic and vivacious, but they were, you know, every day. They, whether it was a feature story, you know, like the one they were out on yesterday, or hard news, it could be anything, and they both just put their all into it, and we're just devastated.
You must be, and my goodness, again, our hearts go out to you. How is Melissa Ott doing, Adam Ward's fiance?
She is upset, understandably so. She is requesting some privacy now. Her family's with her. They're taking care of her. She's got a lot ahead of her. It's going to be rough. You know, she lost her fiance, her best friend. You know, they were very much in love and had a very promising future. You know,
was she really watching it?
Yes, she's our morning producer. She was in the booth. Yesterday was actually going to be her last day. She had taken a job in Charlotte, and they were going to move down there together and start a new life. And she was in there. And you know, and I have to say, when it first happened, none of us was really sure what had happened. We knew there were loud sounds. We knew that she was screaming. But I thought she was just startled by the noise. I thought it was a car backfiring or there were shots in the distance. Honestly, this was the last thing that was on my mind. I did not think that it was this.
And then when it became clear,
yeah,
Kimberly McBroom is my guest. She's the anchor who had that startled expression we all now have vividly implanted in our brains when she realized what was going on there. When you did you recognize? First of all, when they froze the frame and you could see the picture of the perpetrator, did you recognize Vester Lee Flanagan?
We did later in the day. You know, I have to say, when this first happened, again, I was confused. I did not know what exactly was going on at that moment. It wasn't clear that there was actually a shooting until after we were off the air. You know, again, I was still, just all these other things were going through my mind. The longer that we went without hearing from them, without a text saying, hey, you know, this crazy thing happened, I knew that something bad had happened. You know, there was a reason why they weren't texting us back, that we weren't hearing from them, that we weren't getting phone calls from them. It was very clear that something bad had happened. And after the show, we found out for sure what had happened. And then there was some time after that before we realized that both of them had you know, were gone. As far as Mr. Flanagan, I mean, obviously this happened. We were concentrating on, you know, we had lost two friends, two coworkers, and when we saw that picture, that freeze frame, it did look familiar. It did.
And when you came to know that it was him, did you remember him from his troubled time at the station?
I did. I personally did not work with him very much. We had opposite schedules. He worked a lot on the weekends. He was dayside a few days during the week. So I would only see him maybe a couple days a week during the morning editorial meeting. And it was mostly, hey, how are you? That was it. He was not a person that I got to know at all. Just anecdotally, I knew that he had a temper, you know, that he was someone who got angry a lot. And he was let go from here 2 years ago. And, you know, that he didn't take that well. Did I expect anything like this to happen? Oh, no. No way. I don't think any of us did. And certainly not 2 years after the fact.
And when you see his manifesto to ABC News and all the rest of it and his tweets and his Facebook posting of the video, what's your reaction to that?
This is obviously a very angry person. This was a very disturbed person. I can't begin to understand what went through his mind, why he felt so persecuted. I never saw anyone do anything to him here, you know. I just didn't. You know, the things that he said, I don't know where that came from. I really don't. I just think that it was just something that was in his mind and his imagination for whatever reason.
They just needed an excuse to go and perpetrate this terrible violence on innocent people.
I don't know. I guess it's just unfortunate. It's unfortunate for Adam and Allison. You know, they're the ones that we're concentrating on now. I do feel bad for Mr. Flanagan's family. This has to be just a nightmare for them too. Our prayers go out to
you're very sweet and compassionate.
Family, you know.
How is Dad? I saw Dad Andy. Allison's dad.
I have not gotten a chance to talk to him. He was here earlier this morning, and I didn't get a chance to get out there and see him. But they're such good people. I had the pleasure of meeting Allison's parents a couple of times, and they're just wonderful people. Just an interesting family, an educated family. They were involved in their community. Allison was very passionate about the arts. She's a dancer. Just everything that was good. She did everything right. You know, she did everything. She made good decisions. She was brilliant. Everything she did was right. This should not have been the way that she left this world.
Oh, my God.
And Adam, the same thing. You know, good guy, just full of fun. I love going out on stories with him because you knew if you were going to go out with Adam, you were going to have a good time.
And how about Chris? How is Chris, Allison's fiancé?
He's devastated. I mean, he lost the love of his life. He lost his partner. You know, he's a great journalist. She was a great journalist. They talked about stories together. They were just a super couple here, you know, very much their stars were on the rise. You know, his still is, I feel. And I feel like she could have gone to the top. She could have done whatever she wanted to do. And that is what breaks my heart the most, is that there is a lot of lost potential there for both Allison and Adam. You know, he was going to get married next year. He was actually ironically going to leave the TV news business. He was going to pursue, you know, another dream, and he didn't get a chance to do that.
Well, Kimberly McBroom, the anchor at the station WDBJ in Roanoke, Virginia. Kimberly, thank you. I'm so, again, our condolences to you and everyone
thank
at
you.
The station. And I also want to tell you, as a professional, with many years in the business, I admire the professionalism with which you and your colleagues handled this horrible tragedy. You really did us all proud, and I thank you for that. And again, our condolences to you.
Thank you very much. We're doing our best to honor Allison and Adam. You know, that's the work that lies ahead for us, and that's what we're going to do. Thank you.
Okay. Goodbye, Kimberly. Thanks. All right, folks. Let me take a break. We'll ponder this. We'll go back to a discussion of what I was talking about and how our various political leaders are handling this. Obviously, there's also other news. The Dow up 230 as we speak, which is good news. Continuing that rally from that very scary dive it took. Also, the new polls are out. I will be discussing that as the program progresses, and later on we'll even get into the Times Square debate. So there's a lot more coming here at 77 WABC. We'll be back after this. So when I left here yesterday, welcome back. Geraldo along with Noam Layden, 77 WABC, 7 minutes to 11 o'clock. So I left here at noon yesterday and went up to where... high above Madison Square Garden, 33rd Street and 7th Avenue, going up to my Fox studio near Radio City, 48th Street and 6th Avenue. So as I walk into the plaza in front of the Fox News World headquarters around midday, outside the building were at least two vans full of very heavily armed NYPD officers. I thanked each of them for being there individually. I went up to each of them, shook their hands, and I walked in. I was happy that they were outside. And obviously, John Miller, who was a newsman himself, famously got the last interview with Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan back in the day. But John, federal official, local news guy, national news guy now, an NYPD commissioner, he wanted the cops assigned in a very visible way, not only to deter and discourage any copycat killers, you know, those deranged maniac wannabes who don't even have the brains to come up with their own original plan to kill somebody. So he wanted to discourage that. And I have to say, it was reassuring, and I was glad that the cops were there, because there is in this, one of the things about this media culture and the social media and everything else, I mean, aside from the fact that everybody wants to be a star, everybody, however sick and whatever their perverted deed is, they want to get the, they want to get followers and all the rest of that stuff. But this, the copycat phenomenon is, goes way back, way before social media. You know, I mentioned yesterday how I covered a school massacre in the Midwest, and then I predicted on O'Reilly that there would be a copycat, and one happened in Amish country just a few days later, another school massacre. And that's the worry, obviously. But being a reporter is very glamorous compared to a lot of other jobs. I mean, you get on camera, you, but there is the downside, like now with the live shots that everybody does. In my day when I started, it wasn't about live shots. You do your story, you come back, you edit your story, you put it on, sometimes two stories a day, sometimes three stories a day. Now it's all about live shots. So the first thing that happens with live shots is you get these people who are, what do they call it when they Bogart your frame, you know, when they appear when you're trying to take a picture behind you. What is it called? I know they're called morons, but what do you call that when someone comes into your frame? Anyway, these people come on. They say, it was funny. I just heard when I was on The Five on Monday, and I meant to say, I just got a tweet and on the air that somebody on Fox 5, the broadcast station related obviously to Fox News, on Fox 5, someone was doing a live shot in Times Square, and someone came onto the camera and said, F you, Geraldo, live.
I wonder why they
on Fox 5.
Went after you, yeah.
it was so funny that happened. But anyway, that is the comical side of the hardships of doing a live shot. But there's also this other fear that now people who want to grandstand as they commit their crime have a target of opportunity. This guy, this murderer in Virginia, you notice he even waited 30 seconds. You didn't see the video. He waited 30 seconds until the cameraman panned around Adam Ward, the slain cameraman, so he knew that the shot would be live when he murdered that poor girl. Just want to give you a heads up at 6 minutes after 11 o'clock on this, what is this, Wednesday?
Thursday.
Hey, we finally made it to Thursday. Going back out at sea this weekend. Look forward to that. But I want to give you the heads up that at the bottom of the hour, you know, we've been talking about Times Square and the, you know, the titty patrol and how they, I think, are focused on an issue that is relatively insignificant. They have just announced, the NYPD has, that they are assigning 100 officers to the Times Square patrol to ensure that the R or X-rated characters with the body paint, the Desnudos and others, will, I don't know what.
They're doing a lottery.
What they won't do.
They're doing a lottery to see which officer actually gets that. Gets that spot in Times Square.
But the one idea I like, you know, growing up, you always had the same cop on the corner. You know, Officer Krumke was always there. He knew you. You knew him. And I think it really, it served community policing generally tends to defuse a lot of otherwise tense situations. And the cop who's there all the time also knows who the troublemakers are or who the strangers are. And if someone's coming to buy drugs or whatever it is. Times Square in those days was almost like a no-go zone. I mean, you went there, you knew you were stepping into a sleazy, you know, otherworldly experience. Then, of course, it became Disneyland, and now you've got these, you know, the Desnudos and others, the nude performers and others. The really annoying ones are the ones with those filthy character costumes on that come up to you. You just wonder when was the last time they bathed or washed their outfits before they put their arm around you. Anyway, the most famous of all the body painters will be joining us here in the studio live at 10:36, along with one of his desnudas, one of his
Wait, so he's going to paint somebody here, right here in the studio?
I think he's painting her right now.
Huh. You know, when I first heard you were coming to WABC, I thought every show was going to be like this. I didn't know I'd have to wait 5 years to get a show like this.
It does harken back to my old daytime talk show. So before I get there, the Dow is up now 310. If there's another day like yesterday, we will have gone back into positive territory for the year. So my retirement will be pushed back from 105 years old to maybe 90 years old.
Oh, you forgot to mention, I don't mean to interrupt you, but you can watch this all on our web stream.
Oh, right. That's
right. If you want to see the painting job that's being done, go to WABCradio.com or Geraldo.com, and you can watch it all live right
now. It's WABCradio.com. I haven't
connected it.
I haven't connected yet. Okay. I'll put it on later, but go to WABCradio.com. Or is it just WABC? Oh, yeah, WABCradio.com.
That's right.
So I just want to give you, before I get to the polls, all right, we're up 304. They're saying now that, you know, you hear a lot, particularly in a political system. I promise you, I'm going to get to my Louis Rich, Soma, Bob, Ralph. Just hang in there. I'm going to get to you at 866 or other momentarily. But a couple of things. And also another presidential poll out, very important presidential poll out, which with some pretty stunning news. But the Dow is up. I guess China's market went up, so that's part of the reason, because a lot of our panic stemmed from what looked like the collapse of the Chinese financial world, not their economy so much as their companies or their stock market, their financial world. But in terms of real United States economic health, there is no doubt that even though President Obama is decried as taking the economy into the tank and Obamacare and so forth, the U.S. economy is the envy of the world right now. They just announced that the second quarter gross domestic product, the GDP, has been revised. Remember, it was a tepid 2.3%. That followed the first quarter, which they thought was negative because of all the bad snow and everything else. So they revised the first quarter up. Now the second quarter has been revised up to 3.7% growth. So that is, so the gross domestic product of the United States is up 3.7% in the second quarter. I mean, that's pretty darn good. So the U.S. economy posting a much bigger rebound in growth during the springtime than was previously reported. So that's one thing. And also, kind of overlooked in all of the big news with the station shooting and the politics and so forth, unemployment benefits just announced. Fewer people sought U.S. unemployment benefits last week. It's down to a very low, the way these things go, very low, 271,000, the lowest since April 15th in the year 2000. So over 15 years it's been since we had unemployment benefit applications this low. So let's face it, we're doing pretty well. Now, I know that a lot of folks are still feeling economic pain and so forth, but generally speaking, the United States, again, is the envy of the world economically, and the stock market should be up, now around 300 up. Now, talking about numbers, now let me talk about the race for the White House. Donald Trump is kicking butt and taking names. I mean, there is no denying now that this man is not only the front runner everywhere, but I'm thinking more and more. I can't imagine what obstacle is going to be thrown in his way, since so many already have. Donald Trump, I think, is now not only the presumptive leader, but I know it's early and the first vote isn't until the end of January in Iowa and then the early February in New Hampshire and so forth. I think Donald Trump's got it. I think he's going to, unless he does something, blows it in some way that is totally unforeseen. Right now, listen to this. According to Quinnipiac, and that's not a particularly ideological survey, you know, some of them have liberal bents or some of them have conservative bents. Quinnipiac, I think, plays it right down the middle. Trump is dominating the other Republican White House hopefuls. He's got 28% nationally voter support, 28%. Now, if 28% doesn't sound overwhelming to you, the next closest
is the retired neurosurgeon, Dr. Ben Carson, at 12%. Trump, 28%. Carson, 12%. Then you got Bush, Cruz, Rubio at 7%. They're next at 7%. Chris Christie, who was on this morning, is at 4%. He was on CBS and a bunch of other shows this morning trying to gin up his faded presidential aspirations with television appearances. Crash, cut 5 is Christie on Trump. He's very frustrated. Everybody's very frustrated. All the media wants to talk about, and for good reason, is Donald Trump. Donald Trump does this. Well, he yells at the Spanish guy. He yells at Megyn Kelly. He makes a comment about this or that. It's all about Trump. He's taking all the air out of the room. You got it?
Well, it's not my business to be sitting here, even though here we are sitting here this morning for three or four minutes already, and all we're doing is asking about Donald Trump. I'm not going to engage in that. There's no purpose to it.
You have been chairman of the Republican Governors Association. You helped get more Republicans elected. You care about the party.
I do.
I know you do.
That's why I'm running for president, because I care about my country.
So if you feel that someone in your party is misrepresenting the views of your party, why wouldn't you say forcefully?
First of all, because there's no one particular person on that stage that represents our party right now. That's what this process is all about. And as this process continues, we are in August, and as this process continues, people are going to emerge as the leaders of our party. So let's not anoint anybody as the leader of our party when we are 5.5 months away from anybody even voting yet.
He's right, obviously, about the timing. But how do you deny, which Trump is 7 times as strong as Chris Christie right now? 7-1.
Yeah.
What, this morning?
He was on with Chris Cuomo, and it came up again, and he talked about how unfairly he was treated, so he talked about it again.
But it was Chris Cuomo was kind of dragging him into it.
No, he actually brought it up on his own. You could see Chris Cuomo didn't even want to go back there.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Come on, Donald, get over it. Please, grow up. But he did say some funny things about how to negotiate with foreign leaders and countries, and here's Trump on negotiations.
I'm used to, dealing with killers, people that go, I mean, negotiating with Japan, negotiating with China. When these people walk in the room, they don't say, oh, hello, how's the weather? It's so beautiful outside, isn't it lovely? How are the Yankees doing? Oh, they're doing wonderful, great. They say, we want deal.
We want deal. Can you imagine any other politician?
Never would get away with that. Not a million years.
Doing Asia face.
Yeah, not a million years.
He's one in a million, I tell you. But he could very well be our president, certainly our nominee, the Republican nominee. All right, I'm not going to take calls right now. I'm going to go to a short intermission. Then when we come back, I promise I'm going to take all the calls. And then again, at the bottom of the hour, live, and if you have the internet, this is your chance to turn on WABCRadio.com, Geraldo, and you'll see what they're all complaining about in Times Square. Okay, your turn, 866 Geraldo. Let's start with in Queens. Bob's on the line. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Hey, Geraldo, I have a great deal of respect for you. I think you got a tremendous show.
I appreciate that. Thanks.
Not only that, I think you got a great, great heart. But unfortunately, I'm really getting the impression that this tragedy, this unbelievable tragedy that happened yesterday, and my heart goes out to the families, of course, is being used more as a diversion from the issues that were being discussed yesterday. And I know you had a pretty tough show yesterday, and I know you took a lot of heat yesterday, but unfortunately, we've been dealing with gun violence, and of course, it's really connected to mental health issues. And we can, you could do hours and hours of conversation on this, but there are societal issues, societal problems that exist, and they are all connected in many ways. And the issue.
Well, give me your assessment, Bob. Give me your assessment of what's going on. I mean, yes, it was a very tough show yesterday. But what's on your mind today? I mean, what worries you?
What worries me is that we have so many people out there who own guns, and we have very little, and we have very little, if any, true assessment on their mental health. And I believe that, you know, we dedicate funds and put so much money into so many different things that we should start, you know, evaluating every person who has a handgun, and perhaps they should get a phone call or be interviewed or do some type of assessment once every 6 months or once every year to find out what's their state of mind, how's their life going, you know.
Well, I got a great idea. Just the way, yeah. I think driver's licenses, for instance, you go to Florida. Someone gets a driver's license at age 40. They keep the driver's license. Don't you just keep it? You don't have to take a retest in most areas. You don't have to take another driver's test. I think that you should need to take another driver's test every 5 years or 10 years or something like that. And Bob, I appreciate the call. Thank you. Thank you, man. I think, I didn't mean to cut him off there, but I really think that with gun licenses, I think Bob's onto something. That's a great idea. You got to, how you doing? Or something. We should know who has guns. You know, a funny thing. I was once very proud to have as my father-in-law, Kurt Vonnegut, the famed author of Slaughterhouse-Five, Sirens of Titan, Cass Crail. I mean, it goes on and on. I mean, just a magnificent, magnificent writer and historically important. And Kurt was from a family of, I think, Quakers, one of those from Indiana, one of those groups that are nonviolent, but he got drafted into World War II. And he was in the Battle of the Bulge. Ultimately, was a prisoner of war. That's where he wrote Slaughterhouse Five. I mean, that's where his experience there. Anyway, my point is, Kurt was shocked, he told me, when he got to war, how easy it was to kill. He was in one of the frontline units. How easy it was to kill. Because he had been raised where life and death was so precious and so important that he thought as a child that if you were to commit the ultimate sin and take another life, murder somebody, that the God would be vengeful, that the heavens would open, that they would consume you because it is such an egregious deviation, such a sin to kill someone. And he was shocked in war how easy it was to kill. I thought of Kurt when I saw that video yesterday of the shooter in Virginia. You see him walking up with the Glock, the 9mm, with his GoPro on. You see him pointing the gun, then you see him firing the gun at point-blank range, killing Allison and Adam. And how easy it was. That's what struck me, is how easy it was to just, there he is. He comes within 6 feet of the victim, and he opens up. And doesn't stop firing until 15 shots are gone from the Glock, from the extended mag. And that's what you worry about when you think. I mean, going back to what Bob said here. Over 300 million guns in the country. So let's say that 0.1% of those 300 million guns in the country are in the hands of nut jobs. I mean, I'm sure it's more than that, but just say it. Oh, and Islamist this or that, or black power this or that, or white supremacist this or that, whatever crazy thing moves, whatever the owner, that 0.1%, that's a lot of guns in the hands of crazy people. That's a lot of guns. And you worry, I mentioned live shots and reporters and that particular vulnerability, but what about spouses and children? What about cops? And it really is. We are a gun-crazy country. And the politicians are so afraid to deal with it. It's almost like if you insult Trump, for instance, you know Trump's going to come down with a vengeance. I think a disproportionate vengeance. I think that's a weakness. It's a strength of his, and it's also a weakness, in my view. But that's the way people feel about the NRA also. A politician comes out against gun violence in the wake of one of these things, whether it's Sandy Hook or what happened in Virginia or Virginia Tech from 8 years ago that I covered. They're afraid that the NRA is going to come down with a vengeance and say you're liberal, wishy-washy, not deserving, particularly if you're running as a Republican. And I think we got it ass backwards in this country. I really do. I think that we just have allowed that special interest group to distort our own public safety. Andy Golub joins us. Andy has been around for a long time. He's probably the most famous body painter or painter of nudes, either on canvas or on their bodies in New York now. He's in the vortex of the storm over the Desnudas and the others in Times Square. We welcome Andy to the program. Andy, hi.
Hi, how are you?
So how when did you start the whole body painting business?
I've been body painting for around...
Get a little close to the mic. There you go.
I've been body painting for around 10 years, doing it in the outside in the streets for about 8 years.
And how are you generally greeted? I mean, I understand that you were... Were you ever arrested?
Yeah, yeah. In 2011, I was arrested as well as a couple of my models for doing nude body painting in Times Square.
And then what happened?
All charges were dropped, and eventually it took a little while for the city to finally acknowledge that everything that I was doing was completely legal to begin with. And then after that, I started doing, I took it up a notch. I started painting large groups of people.
Before I get into the fun part, let me ask you some serious questions. What, how do you respond to critics that say you're making Times Square tawdry again and unsafe for children like mine?
Yeah, I don't think that's the case. I think that, you know, there's a very important distinction between, you know, nudity and lewdness, or nudity and sexuality. And I think that when I'm out there painting, I'm sort of, you know, sort of showing that by what I'm doing, because I'm treating the body in a completely artistic way, a completely non-sexual way. And for people who see it sexually, it's because they're sort of already in their mind, they have those two connected and they can't really see the difference.
All right. Now, Andy Golub is my guest, the most famous body painter in town. Big controversy. Now, how many cops you said? I thought 100.
It's going to be 100 altogether, but they're adding 50 more to Times Square come the fall.
And they're going to police the nudists and everything?
Yeah. Well, that'll be part of what they do. Yeah. Is to patrol what's going on with some of the panhandling by these costume characters. And yeah, the women who are walking around.
Without further ado, Andy, tell us about the model you're about to bring in.
This is Nicole. I've worked with Nicole several times. And
hi, Nicole.
Hi.
Big girl. Hi, nice to see you.
Nice to see you too.
And here, get on the mic so we can share the mic, would you, Andy?
Sure.
That's it. So Nicole, tell us how you. First of all, let me describe your look right now. All right, so Nicole, how old are you?
I'm 42.
42 years old. Mm-hmm. Now, what are your measurements as, you know, do you know?
I'm a size 14, dress size.
So you, size 14, mm-hmm. And you have, from your very top of your head, your face has a very elaborate, almost like the New Zealand tattoo kind of look in your face, much more benign. Then your lips are red, your face is white painted, and your entire body white painted. You're very Zoptic, is
like a tribesman, I would say.
Rubenesque.
But the painting,
a Rubenesque
sort of
tribeswoman.
There you go.
Right.
That's a perfect description.
All right. So and now tell us, Andy, as you paint Nicole, what message are you trying to convey to your audience?
Body painting is this really amazing art form, and for me, I always make it up on the spot, and I feed off the energy of the person. So it's I never really care if I'm painting some like really skinny girl, a girl with big boobs, a girl that's heavy, men. I've painted people in their 80s. I've painted women with terminal breast cancer. It's sort of like what I do is I respond to my canvas.
Okay, now Andy is responding to his canvas. I understand that, but Nicole, you tell us what motivates you to be naked in public.
I really started doing it to support and promote body positivity.
Body positivity.
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
Well, you know, you see pictures online or whatever of body painted women, and they don't look like me. You know, they're thin, they're models, you know, they kind of look like the people that you might want to see online.
Right.
There are a lot of different people out there with a lot of different shapes.
Are you like a sex worker? Is this pornography?
This is not pornography.
And what's the difference between being naked in public and pornography?
It's intent. I mean, my mother always said it's not about being naked. It's what you do when you're naked. I'm not here about sex. I'm not here about pornography or showing off. This is about art. And this is about supporting people of all sizes.
And what about, go ahead, you can continue. Andy is painting Nicole, even as we, what is left undone in this fairly full canvas?
No, I'm good. I was gonna, you know, I was working on a few more lines, but now that we're engaged in this conversation, I'd rather, you know, focus on that.
Okay, describe your work then with Nicole. I mean, what were you trying to convey? What's the message?
Well, I mean, I'm not really so much thinking about it, and like I think the best art speaks for itself. So, I would say that you know, if I look at it after I paint it, I think it's a very positive. You know, a very positive image, and I think Nicole is a very positive person.
You seem very positive, Nicole. Do you work in a regular job, too?
Oh, yeah. I have a 9-to-5 job.
And do you wear clothes? I mean...
Most of the time, yeah.
But not always.
No, I'm fully clothed at all times.
You're fully clothed at all times. So you just do this kind of as a hobby?
Yeah. You know, it's really more recently become a passion for me.
And your passion is to make sure what?
My passion is to be out there, and I'm sort of standing there for the people who feel like they can't do it. I'm saying you can.
What happens when one of these new officers assigned to Times Square comes to you and said, young lady, put your clothes on?
I'll intervene, and I'll say that it's completely legal, and all of the models that I work with, they all understand, you know, the situation that we're doing, that when we are painting in public, that there's always the possibility of a confrontation.
And how do you feel, Nicole, about Mayor de Blasio being so upset about what you do?
I feel like there are two issues, and they're being conflated. There's a panhandling issue, and then there's a public nudity issue. The public nudity is completely legal, and it's not a problem.
Well, how do you get compensated for being naked in public?
Me? I don't.
At all?
Nope.
So I think that there needs to be an important distinction. The point is that we are not the desnudas, okay? I've been body painting for many, many years in public before the desnudas were even around. They came around as an offshoot of what I was doing, which was painting in public for the sake of art to sort of expand people's ideas of what art can be and also the...
So how do you get compensated, Andy?
Well, I'm an artist. I'm a full-time artist. So I'm doing everything from painting on canvases to painting murals to painting cars and painting people. And I do make money painting people. But when I'm painting in public in Times Square, I'm not doing it for a profit. That's not the purpose of it.
And I don't want to throw cold water on it. But what happens when a 10-year-old comes up to you and says to his or her mommy, "Mommy, look, that lady's naked."
Well, then she's naked. I mean, the human body... it's not anything to be ashamed of.
What happens when it rains?
Then the makeup comes off.
Does it itch? It looks like it might itch. Doesn't itch when the
No, it doesn't itch. Oh. It's makeup. It's theatrical makeup.
Huh. All right.
Yeah.
Is your back done too? I mean, did you?
No, we didn't have time.
You didn't have time.
We'll do that later in Times Square.
Yeah. Are you gonna walk from here naked to Times Square?
Well, that's up to you.
Maybe. I don't know. Depends on how hot it is.
But do you like the attention? Is that part of it?
Of course, she's a performer.
I don't mind the attention.
Do you have a boyfriend, a husband?
No.
And, well, I won't. Do you ever meet anybody that you like? I mean, or are they just so shocked they don't talk to you?
I meet all kinds of people that I like.
I mean, when you're out there naked.
I'm not standing out on the street to attract a boyfriend. That's not why I'm here. But, you know, I'll talk to anybody who wants to come up and talk to me.
Have you ever been painted, Geraldo?
Well, take off your shirt. We'll start right now.
I'm gonna do a selfie. Would you do a picture with me?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll put it on my Twitter and Facebook. I want to see what they say. What my boss says.
I want to see Roger Ailes' reaction.
Yeah, right. At least he'll take his mind off that whole Donald Trump, Megyn Kelly thing. Chris says my wife is cool. 47 minutes after 11 o'clock. Nicole, good luck to you. Andy Golub, I appreciate your art. I think you just make the city a more colorful place. So you don't bother me at all. And I think the city's totally overreacting. It's a lovely young lady, and I wish you the best. So what'd you think?
So I had to say the most entertaining part for me was at the end when, we took some pictures with Nicole, and then she had to leave the building, and she wasn't going to put clothes on because that's not what she does. So here she is walking on the 17th floor of this very corporate building. I'm thinking of all the Cumulus executives in the back she has to walk by who are like, what the hell's going on over there?
Well, this is New York, everybody, and guess what? Guess who represented her? Or represented the artist, rather, Andy Golub, the artist. None other than our own, you know, he can be crazy on the radio, but he's an excellent, excellent attorney.
Ron Kuby joins us.
Yeah, it was so nice to see that you were interviewing Andy. I first encountered him a few years ago when there was a big arrest in Times Square. I had to remind the city that this is all legal behavior. There's no law.
All right, so now back up and tell us why it's legal.
Okay, now remember what we're talking about here is full nudity. We're not just talking about bare breasts. We're talking about top-to-bottom nudity, male as well as female. And there's no law in New York City that prohibits public nudity as long as it's done as part of a play, performance, exhibition, or show. And really, when isn't it? I mean,
what
it's always an exhibition or a show.
That's for sure.
I mean, it's not simple nihilistic nudity. I woke up and I decided not to wear clothes and I forgot and walked out the door. It's always about a show.
Well, back up. Ron Kuby, my guest, the famed civil rights attorney who represented one of the most notorious of the body painters, our guest in the previous segment, Andy Golub.
Who hung up on me?
All right, but the first crackdown, who is mayor?
That would have been Bloomberg.
Bloomberg.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Bloomberg, very sensible guy. Nobody, generally speaking, thought of him as a particular prude. What motivated him?
He actually wasn't motivated. Basically, some cops were out and they were in the sun too long and they decided they were going to do this because it just ain't the kind of thing that the kids ought to be seeing out here kind of thing. So they arrested Zoe West. She was painted top head to toe. She's about 5'2", and she's a regular model. They arrest her. They throw her in a van. It looked like the NYPD had raided Middle Earth and taken an elf hostage. They throw her in handcuffs in the back of the police van, putting a tarp down so they don't get any body paint in the van, drag her to the precinct house naked, and what better gift for a naked model than a lawsuit, right? Cool. So I got her $15,000.
You got her 15 settlement. Grand settlement.
Well, actually 10 because I got 5.
But tell me now the distinction. Right. You got your third. Man. Listen, right. Fair is fair.
Thanks.
And you had clothes on. So the distinction, though, is when the desnudas, these Venezuelan women who are there now, they are aggressively panhandling, which is against the law.
Well, aggressive panhandling, harassment behavior, those kinds of things are against the law. But I think aggression has a different meaning when a woman is coming toward you armed only with two boobs. I mean, it's not like she's got a weapon. She's not some crazy...
A concealed weapon, anyway.
Yeah, 6.5-foot tall guy waving a fluorescent bulb or something like that. I mean, you know, I've been afraid of a lot of things in New York. I've been living here, 33 years through a lot of bad times. I've been afraid of a lot of things. I've never, ever been intimidated by a pair of bare boobs. Now, I'm not saying
that
it's as tough as I am.
This assigning of 100 cops to Times Square now.
Well, the beautiful thing is it's going to take place in the fall, where this tends to correct itself.
Beat her out, so to speak.
and come winter, you're not going to see any of them until with the spring they blossom again. All those breasts go underneath those heavy clothes and jackets and sweaters, and they don't come out again until the spring.
Give me 30 seconds on Donald Trump. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking he's absolutely doing the best thing he can do to make sure that the Republican Party ceases to exist as a national party. He's alienated the women. He's alienated Latinos. And now he's alienated Asians.
Saw that Asian.
Yeah. We're going to talk about it up next in Curtis and Kuby. So this is fantastic. It is the party of angry, white, aging men, which, I get it. It's our audience, but still.
You mean like us?
Yeah, exactly. Except I'm not angry, and you're not really
and
white.
And I'm not really white. Ron Kuby, Curtis and Kuby, up next. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Thanks for going for the ride with us. Mr. Layden, I appreciate you as well.
Thank you very much.
And we'll see you. And tomorrow's Friday.
It is.
Tomorrow is Friday.
All right.
Thank God it's Friday. See you tomorrow. Thank you. Love you.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.